Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to you. I'm calling it a football Friday because there's college football actually being played. Won my first bet of the season last night. That was good.
Good job.
Thanks, Seth. Appreciate
it. You're in the black. I think you should quit while you're ahead. Isn't that what most gamblers do?
Yeah. Most of them go, you know, I hit this one score, so I'm going to enjoy this $50, and I'm just going to watch it for the sport of the game from now on. I'm just going to watch it recreationally.
It's not a jackpot, but hey, look, it's way better than a lot of other poor souls.
That's right.
I'm just gonna take my gains and be on my merry way.
Now that is not what my people do.
I just say that's not how Vegas was built.
That's how the bright lights do not come.
That's not how they put the marble floors in the Bellagio.
Stagnation does not equal marble floors. No. So we are 6 days away from the Texans season opener as we welcome you in on a Football Friday. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. And, boy, we got a lot to get into. It's a busy weekend. The Astros won yesterday. We have game one of Rockets and Lakers tonight. That's pretty cool. And, Seth, we have a backdrop right now. The Texans are going to be shaving the roster down here over the next couple days with, I don't know, you tell me, with a Deshaun Watson extension. We know it's been lurking in the background, but the fact that Ian Rappaport, if John McClain's listening right now, he's just cringing hearing me bring up an Ian Rappaport tweet about something that John probably sees as something, hey, we've been talking about this forever. But when a national media member just randomly tweets something out of nowhere, I sit up and I pay attention to it, possibly as a harbinger that we could be close on something with Deshaun Watson. I'm going to read the tweet.
Well, and Rappaport fleshed it out a little bit more than other information we've had.
He did. Here's what Ian Rappaport tweeted yesterday afternoon. The Texans are working hard with Deshaun Watson on a new extension, sources say. And my understanding is it's likely to be more in line with Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers' deal as opposed to the Chiefs' QB Patrick Mahomes. So
right.
Rodgers and Wilson both have deals that the extensions they signed were 4 years, around $35 million, around $100 million guaranteed, which I, you know, the dollars may wind up being more just because of inflation, you know, that kind of thing, how, you know, everything pecks upwards in the NFL. But in terms of the length of the deal, that's in line with what we've been hearing, that Deshaun does not want a 10 or a 12-year deal. He wants something more along the lines of this, a 3 or a 4-year deal.
It makes sense. I think with Mahomes, it was as much of an emotional commitment to a city that he had just won a Super Bowl in.
He just bought a share of the damn baseball team in town there.
It was like everything that would make you feel like, okay, this is where I want my legacy to be, and there's nothing barring me from this. Look, if Andy Reid retires, if there's hardship down the road, then it's me and this organization walking hand in hand trying to figure out a way onto the next step in the relationship. So, look, more times than not, those things don't end the way you plan at the beginning, but I get it with Mahomes. I think with Watson, he has to treat this much more like an actual business decision, mm-hmm. Because there isn't a Super Bowl yet, and there isn't all that perhaps emotional ties yet. And it's going to be more along the lines of a normal deal for a quarterback where the team gets to lock you down for 4 or 5 years and you get rewarded for it, but you also have a crack in another contract somewhere down the road. So that's where Mahomes' deal was just – it was just a weird deal.
Yeah.
It was a really it's just strange in so many respects. I'm not saying that even positively or negatively. That immediately, like as soon as I found out the details, I thought, well, no, this almost in no way affects actually what Deshaun's going to do, because all the precedents from all the other quarterbacks are much different than this.
Yeah, you know what it turned into, Seth, the Mahomes deal? And for those who don't remember the details of it, it's a 10-year extension for nearly $500 million, like literally $500 million with incentives and things like that. And it, you're right. It turned into more of a distraction with the Deshaun Watson negotiations, or at least our observation of it, than anything else. Because it turned into this thing where we all began talking about, boy, could this be what Deshaun is looking for? Could this set the bar for Deshaun? When in fact, I think what Rappaport points out here by bringing Rodgers and Wilson into the mix is, no, that's an outlier, the Mahomes thing. And this is a much more cookie-cutter thing than we're making it out to be.
It really, honestly, the Mahomes deal in so many ways felt a whole lot like, well, Lee Steinberg, the agent, sure wanted to be able to say he negotiated a $500 million deal.
I feel like Mahomes wanted to tell the world he signed a $500 million deal. It felt like part of why Mahomes, and it sounds weird to say, like, I can't believe he signed this $500 million deal, but it's not a...
It's because it's not. It's not at $500 million. The team, if the team so chooses to do so, you know, 5-6 years down the road, in 2-year increments, they can decide to say, okay, here's a few hundred more million.
That's right.
Here's it, you know.
The team has total control in this whole thing. I felt like part of it was Mahomes just wanted to take a victory lap. You know what I mean?
I don't know. See, I don't get that sense from Mahomes. I really think it was more Lee Steinberg.
Okay. Definitely Lee Steinberg, too. But I mean, ultimately, Mahomes is the one who put his name on the dotted line. Like, no one forced him to. I think that's unless he felt like it was a good deal for him, you know what I mean?
No, I think he genuinely thinks it was a good deal for him. I think he also, he has a father who is a professional athlete, and there's a, you know, kind of an old saying.
That's a good point.
Look, if somebody offers you a fortune, don't turn it down.
Yeah.
So there was, I think there was a whole lot wrapped up into that, and it was just a different scenario.
Yeah, so Deshaun, we may be getting close on a Deshaun Watson deal. We may be getting close. The season, of course, kicks off. On Thursday of next week.
I'm retroactively angry at the various headline writers or just sports writers who knew better but just had to try to compare this to that Mahomes contract to baseball contracts, which are completely and totally 100% guaranteed.
Right.
Like Bryce Harper will make more money than Pat Mahomes will on their current contracts, even though the total number amount is different.
Yep. So the opener is next Thursday. Seth, we had a big announcement yesterday here as a station that we are going to be doing some cool things here leading up to the opener. We are going to have the world's biggest pregame show. If you're ready, you and I are on the pregame show, the actual pregame show for the Texans. I don't know what you and I would have to do if we had to work 100 consecutive hours on a pregame show. Instead, we are just a fraction of the 100 consecutive hours of Texans Chiefs coverage beginning on Sunday afternoon. You're actually part of this Sunday afternoon, beginning with a 4-hour war room hosted by Landry Locker with you and all the other former players that we have here on the station. And it's really, really cool. If you're excited for football season, as I know a lot of you are, this is a great way to ramp up to the opener with the Chiefs and the Texans. That war room on Sunday, we're going to be at night replaying some of the big wins from last year. The Titans win on Sunday. I know we've got the Patriots win last year on Monday, the playoff win over the Bills on Tuesday, and then, of course, the last one on Wednesday will be the win over the Chiefs last year in Week 6. So, yeah, it's the world's biggest pregame, 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage exclusively from Sports Radio 610. I know a lot of people love the 24/7 coverage we were doing during the playoffs last year. This will be a modified version of that. You're up in the middle of the night. There will be Texans Chiefs coverage going on in the world's biggest pregame. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that gets started, I guess, officially. When it gets started officially on Sunday?
Sunday afternoon, yes. Yeah.
But you and I are still doing our preseason show tomorrow, right?
We are doing our preseason show tomorrow, correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so tomorrow afternoon, yes.
There's nothing I hate more than a weekend where I don't have anything planned or an obligation. I love to bitch about the obligation once I have it.
Right.
But without the obligation, I'm lost in space.
Yeah.
I'm wandering around the house, being moody for no good reason.
Put that tent pole in right at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. I need you from 2 to 4. 2 to 4 tomorrow is when I – and I'll be on from 2 to 6. Clint will be on from 4 to 6 with me as well, as we have a Texans kickoff special going on tomorrow afternoon on the station as well. So 100 hours of coverage, the world's biggest pregame show for the season opener. Jose Altuve is getting an MRI today, Seth.
Is it on his knee or his testicle?
Just what we need. It's on his knee.
Okay. Why, he slid into third base in just the most awkward of all ways.
Yeah.
So when they said right knee discomfort, I thought maybe that his right testicle had gotten stretched all the way down to his knee.
There was a euphemism for right testicle. Yeah, I don't know if he's getting an MRI on his balls. I'm not sure.
That'd be tough because you got to hold it in place, you know.
When you go in that MRI thing, they make it. No, that's more of an X-ray thing, right? Where they try to make it so that your boys don't get involved down there. They put like a lead apron on you.
That's just an X-ray.
It's an X-ray. Yeah. Okay, I got you. I'm fortunate. I haven't had to do many of those. But we needed a little Jose Altuve MRI action.
I've had so many X-rays and so many so many MRIs, and the funniest thing is, like, whenever I've had to get something done in my pelvis, a lot of times you can see the little shadow of your little fella down there.
Yeah.
And it's always strange when you're sitting around talking to a doctor and they've got your MRI up on some whiteboard or up on a big computer screen,
right? Or a big silhouette of your wiener up there.
And there might be a nurse laying around and everything. Like, I'm just like, we're just going to ignore the elephant in the room, which is the other nickname for my little fella, the elephant in the room. We're just going to ignore the elephant in the room here, huh? Not even going to just like, you're pointing at a pin that's stuck in my pelvis, but it's directly behind the shadow of my penis.
Right.
You're not even going to acknowledge that.
Okay, just point blank, Seth, when you were in that situation and there were nurses in the room, did you act with a lot of bravado or were you somewhat
embarrassed? Oh, God, no. I tried to be as professional as possible. Dude, okay. No.
Yeah.
Ever since, I'll tell you what. Kudos to Cornell University. The program that they put us through in terms of, you know, like the date rape awareness and stuff that they put us through from our freshman year through our senior year scared the living daylights out of me. This Me Too stuff, it was like old hat for me. I'm so terrified and petrified of ever misstepping or saying the wrong thing that, I would never like wink at a nurse or something like that.
Go Cornell. Yeah. There you go. What did you learn in college? Not to harass women.
I learned for the most part.
For
sexual purposes.
Sure.
I'll harass them, you know, for other, like the same way I would harass men.
Right. Drinks at a bar, things like that. The Rockets. The Rockets should beat the Lakers in the next round. That's what one website is saying. They're saying, hell yeah, the Rockets should. What is the case for the Rockets beating the Lakers in the next round? Seth and I will dig into that next.
Chris didn't think that the way we were constructed that it'd be a favorable matchup to the bigger teams if we played traditional like them. That's why we went small. And I think it's borne out now. Doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that we're the best team out there. It means that we're a really good team going to compete for a championship. That's why we want to just have a chance.
Very first game after the Robert Covington trade was the Rockets-Lakers game in L.A. I was at that game. And that was a fun night. That was the night that Russell Westbrook went off for 41 points. He was the best player on the floor in a game that had James Harden, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James out there. And in that matchup, Frank Vogel decided to try to match the Rockets' small ball in that game, and it did not go well for him. JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard only played a combined 20 minutes in that game. Seth, the website 538, which is sort of this is a nerd alert right here. This is I think a lot of people know who listen. It's a statistical simulation type website, mostly for political stuff, but it's veered into sports now.
I think it started off as sports, right?
Did it? I don't know.
I think it started off, yes, because it was an ESPN property.
Okay.
I think it's so it started off sports and then they veered off into politics. So if you only know from politics, just settle the hell down.
Yeah.
We're not talking politics here. We're talking about the sports stuff.
Yeah, but the 538 says that the Rockets have their simulations have the Rockets winning this series 65% of the time, which is literally the inverse of what the odds makers are saying right now.
This is the danger with this, because they based this on 100,000 computer simulations where they ran the games.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that when you're writing an algorithm to try to figure out how two teams are going to play each other, there is hardly any data at all on an NBA basketball team that is only using guys who are 6'7" and shorter.
Yeah.
So this would be like if you said, okay, I'm going to predict what's going to happen in the stock market, and to do so, I'm going to only look at what's happened in the past 2 weeks, and we're going to use that data. So I put some credence into it in that, look, if you try to separate all your preconceptions about the way basketball is supposed to work in the NBA, there are a lot of hard and fast numbers that show that, man, with this offense that the Rockets have, with the kind of defense that they played versus Oklahoma City, with the amount of turnovers they're able to create and prevent amongst themselves, then they've got a really good shot at beating the Lakers.
I do think that there is one part of this that's very, very simple. If the Rockets are hitting, I think, 40, 42% of their threes, they're going to win. They'll win every – they will beat any team in the league if they're shooting over 40% from three-point range.
Yeah.
The problem becomes when they're not – The problem used to be when they didn't that they would lose a lot of the time. I think they're a more resourceful team now. You know, I think they can, even against LeBron James and Anthony Davis, if they're not hitting on a massive clip of their threes, if they're below what their average is, sometimes even significantly so, I do think they've got some more clubs in the bag to be able to try to muck their way through a game because they're a much better defensive team than they used to be.
Right, right. And that's where a lot of smart basketball people are pointing out and saying, look, This is a bad matchup for the Lakers stylistically.
Yeah.
The Lakers are incredibly talented. Their best two players are better than your two best players. Just if only because Russell Westbrook's quad is just a huge question mark right now. And we haven't seen Russell Westbrook look exactly like himself.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the guard play, yeah, the especially with Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley opted out of the playoffs. And
that's a big one, man.
The Lakers don't necessarily have any answers for the Rockets' backcourt.
He is an elite defender on the perimeter. That is a big one. When he opted out, I said, well, that is good news for the Rockets because of the style they play. I think, too, Seth, if we're trying to find reasons why the Rockets would be, the 538 says 65% chance. I don't think that's the case. But what are the reasons the Rockets could win this series? No home court advantage. So I think in this series, that actually helps the Rockets. In the previous series, it hurt them because they were the higher seeded team. So there's
that's a fan base that despises the city of Houston right now, too, right?
LA,
Most Lakers fans are probably also Dodgers fans.
Good point. That's a really good point. We pointed out the defense with the Rockets. I think, too, just to focus in on Anthony Davis and LeBron to a degree, but first, definitely with Davis, you know, this is Davis's really first postseason where there's expectations for him. You know, he was in New Orleans off the grid. He put up huge numbers in New Orleans, but never really numbers that meant anything. In the seven seasons he was in New Orleans, they only made the postseason twice, and they only won one series. He won one playoff series in 7 years. For a guy who got MVP-level love, that's a ridiculous disparity between what you led your team to and what your personal accomplishments have been. So I still think it's fair to wonder, is Anthony Davis a guy who is built and wired? I think it's fair to wonder it about Harden and Westbrook to a degree as well. But Anthony Davis has really, of the four superstars in this thing, he by far has accomplished the least. And so I think it's still up in the air, Seth. How does Anthony Davis respond, granted as a number two to LeBron James, but how does he respond to being on a big stage like this?
I don't think the Rockets care if Anthony Davis goes off. And in a way, they almost by design would like him to, because it's a whole lot of post-ups. He posted up the third most times in the league last year. He's going to take some mid-range jumpers because he was hot in this last series. He shoots 34.9% on mid-range jumpers.
Let him shoot.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Remember when the old Battier strategy versus Kobe Bryant where, look, the Rockets were okay if Kobe scored 45, but he did it really inefficiently because Battier was just being a pain in his ass.
Right.
Then that actually ended up working out for the Rockets. There's a little bit of that here, I think. I don't fear the big Anthony Davis game because that might play right into what the Rockets want them to do.
There is a proclivity for both of their stars, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, to at random times fall in love with their jump shot, even when it's not going down. Davis is a guy who should be posting, especially this team. I mean, the tallest guy is 6'7". He should be down in the block doing work. But you're right. You know, that's where the three-pointers at the other end come into play. Because if the only way to get Davis and LeBron off in this game are for them to attack the rim, then you're trading threes for twos each time down, you know?
If you're knocking down the threes,
then it's efficient that way, you know?
Yeah, and then also, and look, the Rockets are going to attack with double teams when guys are down in the post like that. That's where LeBron can hurt you, though, too, right? Because LeBron's pretty damn good at getting the ball out of traps like that.
Yeah.
So they'll bracket him when he goes down there, but then, you know, the key is that second level of rotating and helping when he passes the ball out.
Ocho texts in. He says, I think the Rockets are going to beat the Lakers. Look, they average 116 points per game versus that, quote, great Laker defense. The Lakers, I agree with this. The Lakers don't have a Dort or multiple playmaking guards. LeBron is all they have. AD ain't Dream. He's AD McCollum, so he won't kill you with points in the paint. Rockets in six. I think there is something. Look, the Lakers are a more talented team than the Thunder, just based purely on having LeBron James and Anthony Davis on their team. But there is something about when you decided to go with this small ball attack, playing another team that can play small really, really well is much more unsettling, I think, than going against a team that, granted, with two superstars, but you know where it's coming from with the Lakers.
And that's what's so infuriating at times, because the knee-jerk response from people is like, huh, how are those small Rockets going to handle all the Lakers' size? Well, okay, yeah, great. But how are the Rockets going to handle how are the Lakers going to handle all the Rockets' lack of size in the backcourt? They don't have the answers.
They don't. Download the Radio.com app. You can use that Radio.com rewind feature if you're someone who gets up a little bit late. You want to start at the beginning of the show. It allows you to do that. And that will allow you to carry with you the 100 hours worth of programming we're going to have in the world's biggest pregame show leading up to the Texans and the Chiefs on Thursday. It starts on Sunday afternoon with a players' war room, a live players' war room here on Sports Radio 610, breaking down the season, breaking down the matchup on Thursday night. Football is almost here. We are excited about it. The Texans play here on Sports Radio 610. Speaking of Texans, Jadeveon Clowney, former Texan. The Clowney watch may be coming to an end soon, Seth.
Oh. And
yeah, an out-of-nowhere contender is pushing really, really hard, reportedly, to sign him. We'll dig into the contenders next. All right, the other night, after the scrimmage, Bill O'Brien was asked, it was a Texans scrimmage in NRG Stadium, their last scrimmage before the regular season. They're going to spend this weekend trimming the roster down to 53, cobbling a practice squad together, making sure they got that emergency list in the upper right-hand drawer in case, you know, something happens, a rash of injuries, there's still a virus floating around out there. But O'Brien was asked the other night who stood out in the scrimmage. Here's who he cited.
Jacob Martin.
Have a follow.
Jacob Martin played good tonight. That was the guy probably stood out. You know, Stevie Mitchell made a few plays. Scotty Phillips ran hard. So, yeah, no, but Jacob Martin, he's had a good camp.
All right, so, Seth, there are 80 players on this roster.
Yeah.
Now, not all of them played in the scrimmage. You know, I would say it looked like from the internet, because none of us were allowed to watch this in person or streaming, it looked like about 8 or 10 of the core players on this team didn't play. But that meant there were still a lot of core players out there. Jacob Martin was the first name that came up. And if you remember, it was about a year ago that Jacob Martin came over in the Jadeveon Clowney trade.
And I feel a little bit foolish for not having made this connection before.
Go ahead. Look,
Jacob Martin's had a really good camp.
Yes.
It's no surprise that Bill O'Brien would say him, but say, you know, that Jacob Martin had a really good scrimmage. But I do wonder if in the back of Bill O'Brien's mind it was a little bit of, hey, connect the dots, you stupid SOBs.
It's
Jacob
gotta be
Martin
like
had a Jacob Martin had a hell of a scrimmage. What kind of scrimmage did Clowney just have with whichever team he's not currently on?
I'm not even begrudging O'Brien. I always put myself in the shoes of it. Like, what would I do? I'm like, I would probably, there'd be 15% of me that would be like, hell yeah, I'm rooting for Jacob Martin because he was part of that trade. Hell yeah, I am.
Well, of course, I mean, it was his trade. Like, that's part of the reason you pull that back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, like, we're not going to retry Bill O'Brien over any of these trades. Not right this moment.
No, it's just a humorous little wrinkle in the whole thing.
Let's think about these things. Anthony Weaver is a defensive coordinator because Bill O'Brien named him defensive coordinator. I've said all along that I think Anthony Weaver is going to utilize Jacob Martin really, really well,
mm-hmm.
just because it's the smart thing to do. And Weaver comes from this school of thought where, like, hey, let's be creative and figure out ways to get our best players isolated on bad players and have chances to make plays. I think he's going to do that with Jacob Martin. But then there's maybe also the extra little added incentive of, boy, my boss would probably really appreciate that, too.
You always want to make your boss look good, right?
Yeah,
no doubt. Any walk of life, you want to make your boss look good.
I would say, all sarcasm aside, if Jacob Martin turns out and develops into a really good NFL player, this would actually address a lot of my concerns that we had with Bill O'Brien and especially Jack Easterby, as Jack Easterby transitioned from preacher and character coach into a guy that was going to be involved on the personnel side of things. I know he's not running personnel, but I know, you know, he's involved in these contract discussions and whatnot and getting these trades executed, that a guy like Jacob Martin, you know, identifying him and kind of cultivating him along, that actually is a huge win for the organization and the structure.
No question about that. Absolutely.
Or it would be. He still has to get there. Yeah.
Right. It's the preseason. He's been going against twos at practice for the most part. So, but then there's Clowney. There's the Clowney side of this thing. And as you pointed out, Seth, Clowney not with a team yet, but the season is getting ready to start next weekend. So now the clock is really ticking because Jadeveon Clowney has managed to, for the second year in a row, successfully dodge what seems to be his least favorite part of the calendar year, training camp. So now the gas pedal is on for Clowney, and the word yesterday was that from Tom Pelissero and others around the NFL is that we've got a new contender for Clowney. Who are the teams that we've heard so far? It was the Seahawks possibly trying to retain him for a year. It's been the Tennessee Titans because of the tie to Mike Vrabel. The New Orleans Saints.
Well, the Browns previously.
The Browns had made him a big offer. The Browns made him the biggest offer with the most years. He said no thanks, at least for now. We'll see. The New Orleans Saints. Kind of, you know, sort of coming in out of nowhere here at the 11th hour, putting what's being called a, quote, all-out blitz. Tom Pelissero of NFL Media said the Saints are putting an all-out blitz on to sign Clowney. He's been in touch with Sean Payton a couple of times. So, to Seth, purely from the interest of a Houstonian, as someone who roots for and covers the Texans, what are you rooting for in this Clowney situation? How are you rooting for this Clowney thing to play out?
I would love him to go to the Saints because, for one, you know, you're not going to have to worry about seeing him twice a year like if you went to the Titans.
Wouldn't it be fun, though?
It'd be fun. It would be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
Boy, that would be good drama, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Though? Yeah, maybe Clowney. You know, Clowney will low-key talk some smack.
Right.
You know, he doesn't – it's almost like he's not planning on doing anything. He just can't help – he's not a natural trash talker, but sometimes he can't help but let his honest feelings out. Like when he said that Bortles was
trash. He called him trash.
He just said it casually on his way out the room.
He said it after they lost to the Jaguars, too.
He was kind of just joking, but it was – but it shows up so good in print.
It does.
It was Bortles. He was trash.
Still unemployed.
Is there anything more honest than be like, I mean, yeah, they kicked our ass, but he's trash. Yeah. Okay, good. So, yeah, twice a year. Yeah, you made me rethink this. Okay, I hope he goes to the Titans.
I was rooting for – I tweeted this yesterday, and I got a few people, including Wade Smith, tweeted a gif of somebody – I forget who it was, but somebody doing the waving like, no, 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 like the scared wave of no, 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 no.
No, 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 no to the Titans?
To the Titans. And
well,
I said, Wade, come on. Wade, you're a burgeoning radio star. You want content and drama, my friend.
But Clowney does – he shows up in big games, you know?
He does.
In primetime games and playoff games, except for the last playoff game he ever played for the Texans where nobody showed – this is a weird game. Yeah. This is like some really steady performers other than Clowney just – didn't show up in that game.
Yep.
Anyway, 2 years ago.
Colts game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now I'm having PTSD over that, having a hard time staying present. That I think the Saints make sense because, for one, everybody's saying, like, oh, he just wants to sign a one-year deal and get a long-term deal. I don't know if that long-term deal is in there. He would only be 28 years old next year when he hits free agency, but I think he's pretty established now is a guy that flat out doesn't want to go to training camp. And I think as every coach in the league is stumbling over themselves trying to create good cultures, I don't know if they want to give Clowney any more than a one-year deal. He might go from year to year kind of just being a soldier of fortune and going off to the best team. Maybe a team will give him a 2 or 3 year deal. But I think they see him as a guy that, look, will play his butt off when he's on the field for you. But he doesn't want to be there for OTAs, even if he's in the building. Remember the last time he was here at training camp for the Texans, he was a very minimal participant in training camp.
Yeah.
We were to the point where we were kind of wondering whether it was one of these soft holdouts or a hold-in.
That was the second West Virginia training camp, where it was almost like Clowney had a field to himself. The team was practicing on one field, and Clowney's running around cones on another field in a tank top.
So I think there's a perception, like, regardless of how many games he's played over the past 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. I know sometimes people say, he's not injury prone. Look at all these games he's played. Teams look at the way Clowney has been managed, and they feel like, okay, that is a stretch of games played that is teetering on the edge and needs constant massaging and constant care and tender love to actually get him out there on the field. And they don't want to give a whole bunch of money to a guy like that, but they'll gladly pay him for 1 year, $10 million. The Cleveland deal was supposedly 1 year, $15 million.
Oh, okay. I saw Cleveland. What I saw with Cleveland in one of the articles was it was around 17 or 18, and it was for 2 or 3 years. Like, Cleveland was the only one that offered a multi-year deal. Seahawks, I know, was 1 year, 15, or they may be down to 10 now also.
Yeah, Breer had said 1 year, 15, but those things change over time.
Another
offer came.
Yeah.
So I think New Orleans would make the most sense for him just in terms of being on a team that's definitely going to be good this year.
That plays in a lot of games where Clowney has thrived. You know, Clowney, Seth, you make a great point, which is Clowney does have a flair for playing well in big games when the lights are the brightest. They play in a lot of bright light games. And if his goal, look, you and I can sit here and debate whether or not he's going to get that deal. But if his goal is to get a multi-year deal with big dollars, then the Saints make sense from that standpoint, because you are essentially putting film out there for not just for the other 31 teams, but for the other 31 fan bases, too, to get clamoring. You know what I mean? Sometimes these teams listen to their fan base, and if there's enough of a drumbeat to get Clowney, especially if he starts actually getting to the passer. That's the big thing. Even with the training camp stuff you're bringing up, Seth, if he all of a sudden goes out and has the season we've been waiting for, where he gets 11.5 sacks, then there may be teams ready to give him 3 or 4 year deal, and they wouldn't care if he doesn't take training camp all that seriously.
Yeah, and he's just a different – he gets evaluated differently because – and I'm not making excuses for him. He's just type of player. He's like a nose tackle. In terms of like how you should look at his statistics, you got to look at him like a nose tackle. Where like the really good nose tackles usually don't have prodigious stats. Mm-hmm. A lot of what they do doesn't get noticed by the typical box score. And Clowney is that guy. I mean, he commands double teams. He beats his blocker, but and offenses have to account for him. He just does not have a knack for actually getting the quarterback on the ground.
Yeah.
That one little minor detail, that nagging detail.
That nagging detail of actually executing the 7 or 8 yard loss on the sack as opposed to just pressuring him into an incomplete pass.
It would be like if Cindy Crawford, if her little imperfection wasn't that mole that actually ends up being attractive. It was like if her imperfection was a dead twin growing out of her face.
Yeah.
You know, like a little right. a little fetus that never got removed.
Right. Three jagged scars across her left cheek.
That's her just one
shape
imperfection.
Of a lightning bolt. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Clowney's tiny little imperfection is he can't seem to actually tackle the quarterback.
God dang it. All right, so Clowney, the Clowney watch may be coming to an end. These teams are saying they want him in there by Monday because you got to start getting ready. You're installing game plan for next week. How hard is it? You know, the Texans brought in some guys on the offensive side of the ball this time last year. So, especially with an offense that's reportedly as detail-oriented as O'Brien's is, you know, the guys like Carlos Hyde brought this up. I know Duke Johnson, Laremy Tunsil, probably Kenny Stills. They were, for most of the season, literally just getting the game plan for the week because they weren't here for all the installation that went in. You were a defensive player. And I don't know, not to dive too deep into what the Saints' scheme is, although the word on the street is Clowney would fit that scheme. It would be more what Clowney is used to doing than the 3-4 he played in here. How hard is it for a defensive player, do you think, to come in a week before camp and be able to just go out there and get unleashed?
It depends on how much work they're willing to put into it. And I think that one thing you find in the NFL is coaches are always so, I think they're so impressed and they love pointing it out when a veteran player comes in. And basically immediately that first week, he's just studying. I went to the Jaguars late in my career, and, you know, it was a new defense, different terminology and stuff, and it's a lot easier on defense than it is on offense. But it's a whole lot of new terminology that you got to learn and be able to know exactly what you're doing, you know, at the drop of the hat in a high-stress situation. So you just kind of – it's like you're cramming for a final. You just set a schedule, and the first thing in the morning I was doing walkthroughs on my own in the hallway. I had my own little cones set up, and I'd go through the entire game plan and the entire playbook and walk through and do go through every scenario. And then at lunch, I'd do the same thing. I'd do my walkthroughs and then at dinner. So, like, to the point where it took me maybe, like, 48 hours to know the whole – everything that they had learned during camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just a matter of drilling it in your head. The game plans themselves are a lot simpler than, like, putting in the whole playbook during training camp. So is Clowney going to have an issue? Like, he might make a couple mental errors or something because of it, but I would imagine it's just a matter of learning the terminology. You know, like Brady, that's what Brady just talked about this offseason. This is the first time in 18 years he's actually had to learn an offense. And it's not like the concepts or anything are hard to pick up. It's just the verbiage.
The language.
It's a whole different system. Like the personnel groupings, Bruce Arians uses a completely different terminology than the Patriots did. So all these little things that are second nature that you don't think about, all of a sudden you got to actually think about. And it gums things up a little bit.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday.
I thought you were smiling. Were you going to call me a Nick Martin like I was sucking?
I promise you, I wasn't. No, I was smiling. Yeah. Not at all. I was thinking of Clowney as you were describing yourself, laying out all those cones and going through those drills. No, Seth, I respect it. I respect it greatly. Am I being unfair to think that Clowney's not waking up at 6:30 in the morning to put a bunch of cones out in a ballroom at the hotel to make sure he's got everything down pat for the game?
I think that might be fair, although he's a much headier player than people ever want to credit him for.
That is fair.
He does a really good job of, like sometimes some of the more complex plays to diagnose, Clowney does a really good job at it for the most part. No. Now he also jumps off sides in critical situations too. No.
I wasn't thinking that at all, but now that I know it might trigger you, that may come up again at some point this season. You never know. Seth Payne, Nick Martin clone.
I'll be honest, for the kids listening, there's a certain amount of, look, if you're suffering, this is a rule. If you're suffering, never let your opponent see it, but go ahead and let your coaches see it.
Yeah.
They love nothing better than the guy that fights through the pain.
DTS,
you know?
Baby.
Win every wind sprint, but be sure the coaches know that it's not so easy to win every wind sprint.
Right.
You know, put a grimace on your face and let them know you're really putting out.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That is really good advice right there. Here's Justin Reed. Speaking of the Texans pass rush, Justin Reed met with the media yesterday. Here's Justin Reed on how the Texans are going to get after the passer this year.
I've seen Charles Minshew take real big strides this camp. I mean, and you usually see it guys coming from their first year to their second year making that jump, and I've seen that in Charles, and I'm excited about it. As far as Jacob, the guy has a motor that doesn't stop. I'd even say he's on his way to being one of those top-tier pass rushers, because every time he's in the game, he makes an impact. You can even think back to the Buffalo Bills game last year when he had that the fumble recovery and the plays he's made ever since he's come here from Seattle. I think that our pass rush has been bolstered, especially behind Coach Weaver. And, you know, I'm excited about what that's going to be able to do for us as a defense to be able to make more plays.
Yeah, but Justin Reed is right. Man, Jacob Martin in that Buffalo game, he was the third most important player in that game behind J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson in terms of the impact that he made. Man, Jacob Martin, Seth, more love. I tell you what, if Jacob Martin doesn't turn into a guy who gets at least like 8.5 or 9 sacks, there's going to be a ton of people who have to eat their words from this preseason. Weaver, O'Brien, Justin Reed.
Well, no,
people
I
going
know.
Crazy it's, over Jacob Martin. There's
well,
Martin
it's
mania.
Set it up. It's putting pressure on Jacob Martin, like good positive pressure. Like he's got to produce now. People are going to be very disappointed if he doesn't produce.
They're taking up for him.
That's another thing, Sean. It's there's nothing better than the praise you get from defensive backs. Like as a defensive lineman or a front seven guy, it's cool because the defensive backs, for one, are usually like the most entertaining. And when they praise you, they praise you loudly. And usually with a certain amount of humor. So it's like, it's just always, it's sweet, sweet music when a defensive back praises you. But they also, like, they've got the best seat in the house for a lot of the stuff that the guys up front do. And like, the safeties and cornerbacks a lot of times will notice interior defensive linemen more than anybody else because they're watching film. And, like, you know, a lot of times they're spectators on those plays. If they're not directly involved with it, they're watching film and they're seeing everything that's unfolding up front. So, like, when an interior defensive lineman like a Menihu does something really cool, sometimes the defensive backs are the only guys that notice it. Like, even more so than the defensive line coach, because he's just being a prick for whatever reason. But Aaron Glenn will come up and give you some love.
Well, I was going to say, so we know on the offensive side of the ball that it's just normal protocol for a quarterback or a 1,500-yard rusher to buy a really nice gift for the offensive lineman. Have you ever had a defensive back buy a gift for you, an interior defensive lineman, at Christmas time? Or should they?
Wish I could come up with a lie to tell here and an exaggeration. That's a good thought. That's a good sentiment, Sean.
Yeah.
But no, that's not typical.
I'm just out here sticking up for the fatties on the defensive line is what I'm doing, Seth.
The best sound you hear from defensive backs, like when their approval is when they do like a high pitch, ooh!
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's the best sound in the world.
Like out on the field?
Yeah, or in the film room. Because like usually, you know, like when you break up into positions, sometimes you'll hear the defensive backs going crazy for some reason, and then maybe one of them will run over and poke their head in.
Oh, that's cool.
And be like, Gary Walker, what'd you do to that man?
That's cool. Oh, it's the little things during the season that keep you going. Seth, you grew up on a farm, right?
I grew up with my mom. My dad was a farmer, and so I didn't grow up right directly on the farm.
But you did some farm things as
a kid, right? I guess I was half and half on the farm.
Right. I know you've told tales before on the show that I assume are true about baling hay and doing
some things. No. I did nothing but, I worked on farms. And
You're familiar with the farm life. Lived
on farms in the summer and everything.
Do you have great respect for football players who worked on farms?
I do. Well, more so just like I don't want to put myself into that category. The kids that actually lived 365 days a year on a farm, especially, because those it's rare that you find a farm kid that isn't one of the hardest workers on the team and just like a tough as hell guy. And I'm genuinely not talking about myself. I'm talking about these kids from Iowa that.
Did you know that before Wednesday that AJ Moore grew up on a chicken farm?
I didn't know until Wednesday, until somebody asked him about it.
Yeah.
And I got excited about that because it meshes with what everybody's saying about AJ Moore, doesn't it?
It does.
He sounds like a salt of the earth type guy.
And a hard worker.
Works his ass off.
Brings the juice every day at practice, which I would imagine on a farm, you better bring the juice if you grow up on a farm.
This is the general rule, Sean. This is what happens is that anything bad, anything miserable about practicing football is still 400 times better than climbing up a silo in August with silage falling down your back, or just being knee deep in manure and falling down because you slipped or something. It's all better than working on the farm.
I was just going to say he worked on a chicken farm, which has some of the nastiest elements to it. Here's AJ Moore the other night about what he learned and how it's helped him growing up on a chicken farm.
Hardest part about chickens would have to be cleaning the chicken trays, and because it gets kind of nasty, and putting out chicken feed just because there's so much feed to put out for so many chickens. We have over 150,000, so it's a bunch of feed to be put out.
150,000?
Dude, when my daughter was in high school...
How do you name them all?
When my daughter was in high school, now granted, she went to high school. My kids went to high school up in Chicago. They lived with my ex-wife during high school, but I saw them plenty, and I would go up there and visit them. They'd come here, etc. During her senior year in high school, it might have been part of a science project her junior year, and she just decided to keep them because she loved them so much. She had chickens. Yeah. In their backyard, they built a chicken coop behind the garage, and she had three or four chickens that she took care of. They ate the eggs. The eggs were in there. They never bought eggs at the grocery store because the chickens laid the eggs. Seth, it is one of the nastiest thing. A chicken coop. It's incredible how much waste these animals can generate.
Yeah,
it's disgusting.
There's a whole lot of poop involved in farming.
Oh,
that's what
God.
They don't tell you when you sign up.
Yeah.
There's listen, you're going to be mostly, 50% of your day is going to be devoted to poop management.
Oh. If more than that with the chickens, it's incredible. Oh my God. Bassfield, Mississippi is where AJ Moore is from. That's where
my least favorite animal was the pig, because there's something about pig manure doesn't come off easy. Pig manure just has a tackiness to it.
Is that how you power rank your animals based on their feces?
Yeah, based on the manure, yeah. I don't have a lot of. I honestly don't have a lot of experience with chickens. I might have to go. I might have to go volunteer to go work on Von Miller's chicken farm with him for a little bit this offseason.
There you go.
Not his chicken ranch, everybody. Whole different thing. Whole different thing.
No, and he doesn't have one of those. Just to be clear, he doesn't have a chicken ranch, Von Miller. He's got a chicken farm, not a chicken.
Right.
There is a chicken ranch, but anyways.
There used to be. Yeah. Didn't you know who ruined that was what's his name? With the loud
Lamar Odom.
No. No, Marvin Zindler.
Oh.
I believe Marvin Zindler did the big exposé on the chicken ranch.
Oh, I'm thinking of the bunny ranch.
And I think Oh, that's right. That was the bunny. Yeah.
All right. Radio.com app. Download that. You can use
it. In high school, we used to work out to or we used to warm up our wrestling team. Would warm up to LaGrange, which was a song about the chicken ranch. But none of our parents knew any better.
ZZ Top.
I didn't know any better until after the fact. My brother told me, "Yeah, you dumbass." Yeah. It's about a I'll use a word I wouldn't use.
We begin, let's jump out here. We begin 100 hours of the world's biggest pregame show for the Chiefs and the Texans. We begin it Sunday afternoon. If you haven't heard, that is what we're doing, and we're excited about it. You should be as well. If you are a football fan ready for football season, you don't need to go anywhere else starting, well, at all, but definitely starting Sunday afternoon with the world's biggest pregame show here on Sports Radio 610. Did we get a smoke signal yesterday that a deal for Deshaun Watson is imminent? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.